The full crew is here for Monday night Big Footy Tiger Cast. Hope you're all doing well. Coming off a very, very wonderful win against the Blues on Thursday night, which has really rattled the cage of a few people in the media, especially. And Michael Voss, probably the most, it's rattled his cage. He had no idea what was going on Thursday night. But what an amazing performance. And I'm glad the full cast is on tonight. For the first time since a long time, really. But glad to have everyone here. Tiggs, welcome back. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. Thanks for having me. What a win.
What a win. Love the scarf and hat combo. Very nice.
Mate, yeah. I apologise to the viewers with the grey beard. It's just I had my injections last week, so it makes my head really sensitive. I can't use the bloody shaver, the electric shaver with it. So
I've had to
be all scruffy, so I apologise for that.
No, I like it. CB, welcome, mate. Where's the headband? You were probably the perfect candidate for a headband.
I said I wouldn't steal his bit, so I wanted to get one, but I said no, I'd let him. And then you went and stole his bit anyway. So yeah, thanks, mate.
I thought we were going one in all in. Sorry, EJ, I stole your thunder, didn't I?
Yeah. We're good, mate. Anytime you roll, Carlton's a pretty good week, isn't it? So, pleasure to be here tonight.
Most definitely. EJ, how are you, mate? Look, I will give you full credit. You were the initial headband aficionado. I've just tacked on to the end of it.
Yeah, I had to go to Kmart, Big W, whatever, get something else. And I just thought, I'll just Google. And I Googled it and it said headband $3.50. I thought, right, just take me to it. This is going to be a bit of a fun 45 minutes or so. Let's go.
Absolutely. Now, my one's actually just a Batman belt turned inside out, so I had to get a little bit creative with my one. Shout out to Lauren for folding that in half for me because I couldn't do it myself. Grog, welcome, mate. How's it going?
Always good to be back after a win and getting one up on the media. I looked for a couple today, but both Big W and Kmart down here had sold out. So I wonder if there's any Tiger supporters out there rocking to work today.
What is going on in Geelong, mate? They're selling out headbands. What is going on?
Bailey Smith. He blew the headband.
Grock and I had the pleasure of watching that game sitting next to each other at the footy, and it was just going mental in our area. I want to give a shout out to the gentleman sitting behind us as well who realised who we were in at about the third quarter and had a good chat. He's getting amongst it as well, so shout out. There was very, very much good fun, especially when we're on the winning end of things, which is really, really good. Before we get stuck into the review of the Carlton game, I do want to just bring this up to give everyone's attention to this briefly. We're running a 2025 North Melbourne death ride chart. Now, I did make a separate video on this on YouTube, so make sure you check that out if you haven't already, but it's pretty much this in summation. So we're gonna charter their losses and wins along the journey. But most importantly, we've got the total losses, the ladder position, and the current draft pick, which is currently sitting at number 7. So draft pick number 7 for the North Melbourne pick so far, which, look, we probably wanted to be a little bit higher come the end of the year, but they couldn't knock off a Bulldogs midfield that was pretty much gutted. And they've got Melbourne this week who are actually looking really, really good. So it's going to be interesting to see how they fare this week. But yeah, I thought we better ride this one home. What's it, just quickly around the room, what's everyone thinking? Where do you think this pick's going to end up in terms of number range?
Well, if I go first, I'd say West Coast being as shit as they are, but my gut's still telling me, yeah, we'll get the number one pick. North have serious, serious development issues. And I think that's going to make them only win a couple of games.
Oof, I like that. We'll take that. CB, where's this pick ending up?
No, I still think probably North are ahead of us and West Coast list-wise. So every chance. Look, I'm saying bottom three for those three clubs, possibly. But, I'll give North, you'd think they should be winning 6 to 8 games with that list. So we'll see where it goes.
The interesting thing, EJ, is I've heard little whispers that maybe Comden and one of their other defenders might be suffering from injury. So they could be a couple of key defenders not 100% right in the coming weeks as well.
Oh, Seinfeld, that's a shame, Giff. I know that the Bulldogs had injuries on the weekend, but I still thought North held up all right in reality. So top four pick. Don't know where the top four pick.
We'll take that. Grok, round us out. Where's this pick landing?
Yeah, it'd be top four, I think. It all depends on St Kilda. I think St Kilda are the wild card that could potentially put St Kilda, put North Melbourne just outside that bottom four pick, depending on them. I've got obviously us four, and yeah, I think they're the clear bottom four side. So definitely it'd be a top four pick.
Richmond Journey, welcome. Long time no see. I think it's going to be a top four or five pick as well, which is good. And Vertex, yep, definitely confirming if North finished last, we do get the number one pick. I don't know how that differs. If, say, hypothetically, LDU leaves, they get a compensation pick. I'm not sure what happens there, but either way, pick one or two.
Yeah, the compensation was after the first pick that you got. Yeah.
Okay, so we would get one and they would get two in that scenario. That's okay. Right. Well, this is an interesting one. Family VR Hags got a source that says Murphy Reid is looking to move to Melbourne ASAP and is a childhood Tiger supporter. Jeez, I'm not sure. Wouldn't mind that. Oh, Murphy Reid.
Bullshit. So are you saying to me with that compensation, are you saying to me that LDU, after he nominates the Tigers, we get the number one pick off North and LDU? Is that what you're saying?
That would be best case scenario. Oh, that would be unbelievable. All right, let's get stuck into the Richmond-Carlton game. We are going to do things a little bit differently tonight with a full house of people on. I've paired up people to discuss parts of different topics and things like that. Otherwise, we'll all be here till midnight, which I'm sure the viewers may not even mind, but we do have sleep we have to get for work tomorrow. So with that said, the Richmond 13-4-89 defeated Carlton 9-15-69 by 13 points in front of 80,000 people at the MCG. Goal kickers for Richmond, Jack Ross 2, Nank 2, Lawler 2, Campbell 2, Mansell, Lynch, Hopper, Brown and Bauer, all with one each in what can only be described as an unbelievable display. Grok and Tiggs, I'll throw to you guys first. Give your thoughts on the game, how you thought we won the game, any tactical moves that you liked and things like that.
You go first, Grok. I'm just patting my dogs just come to say g'day. You can go first, and I'll go after you.
No worries. Yeah, I thought that was, first off, I think that was probably the best win we've had in a long time, probably since early days of Dimmer when we were struggling. That's something that we'll definitely build on. Again, I think that was just pressure, pressure, and effort. We talked, the last couple of weeks about what we wanted to see out of the game, and it was effort, intensity, not giving up, just play four quarters of footy, and we got that and more. We were really clean with our ball movement too, especially in that second half, which, again, there were signs in the preseason where maybe our ball use wasn't great. But I think that just goes to show that what we saw in the preseason was Uze and the coaches holding cards close to their chest. There's a lot of really quick ball movement through the middle that was really evident in the second. We ran Carlton off their legs. Like, really, we were running all over the top of them by the end of the game, which is massively impressive considering how young and inexperienced our list is. So I think, again, it just comes down to effort and pressure. And at that point, Carlton really shit the bed, couldn't handle it. And even when they were out clear, in space, the thought of them being tackled was insane. So, yeah, I think we really just put them to the sword with that and putting balls to space in the grass and letting our runners run onto it towards the end. It was an amazing win. And that's the blueprint of what we should be doing with the kids that we've got coming through, the smalls. Just pressure. Go back to what we know.
Yeah, for me, my early thoughts, which I wrote down, look, the first quarter, I think we were, our kids in particular, and also being the first game of the year, we probably had a combination of the kids being starstruck, their dream has now become a reality, though they were switched on, it was, absorbing, the first 5-10 minutes of that first quarter, shit, I'm here and I'm living it. So they weren't right as on as they could have been. So they might have been a little bit slower on the get-go because of that. And we looked off pace. We looked like that half-second delay compared to Carlton, particularly in the forward half. Our forward half guys were overworking. They were trying to chase everyone. So easy ball was coming out and allowing that transition for Colton from forward to mid and then kicking them kicking to the forward line. So what was really pleasing for me is instead of making the ground so long as Colton tried to do, really stretch the length of the ground, we really shortened the ground for him. We pushed our forwards up, particularly our smalls, but we kept our talls deep, which is innovative. I haven't seen Uze do that before, and he actually did it. And it gives me a wry smile thinking when we get the three forwards in, it's the type of game plan that you could play three forwards in. You keep anchor them deep. You have one as a centre-half forward that can roam up, bit up the ground to support the smalls that are a high up pressing. And then the backs move up as well too. So basically what we've done is we've reduced the size of the ground to about 75 metres of gaming area. So with it being so compressed, it forced Colton, instead of this loose, easy, able to maintain position, that every disposal had a risk associated to it. And our smalls, because they're in close to the midfield line, they could press. And when they press, it created chaos. And when it created that chaos, it allowed us to be a lot more direct with the ball because we had deep targets at the back half. It's been commented on the shows that, you know, one of those was moving our forward to drag Wiedering away from centre-half back, put him actually into the as a full-back traditional, and so we avoided going through him. It was brilliant to see. What really excited me, though, and I actually tweeted it in the first 10 minutes of the game, even though we're getting smashed, our kids, or well, the whole team, but I want to focus on the kids, never dipped their heads. You can see them smiling with each other. You can see them when they were trying to go to contest, contest, I was still doing it, even though they were getting beaten pretty badly on the turnover. And that's the only thing that was really killing us for Colton. The other thing, too, for that game, the stats lie. We wanted Colton to have the ball because that second possession when they turned it over to us launched our offense. So basically what I see Adam doing now is, which is the smartest thing he could do, our defense is our strongest line. Why? We have more premiership players in that defensive half. So he's built, obviously, our game plan is similar to what Dimmers was, but without the tools we have with the experience we've got with Nank, and then you get your Broads and your Vlostons and the like, we launch basic counter-attacking footy. That's what I reckon we're going to evolve into, and it's going to carry us a fair way. We are going to get opened up, though. We are going to get opened up. There's going to be a lot of times where that first quarter on with a good side might drag on for a quarter and a half to two quarters before we balance it out. But once the kids really click on and really believe they're there, and I think we've done a huge thing with that win, that I reckon that game alone has given an 80% improvement in believing that they deserve to play. It's huge.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, as long as we can prolong how long teams take to maybe nail us at some point, then we actually give ourselves a fighting chance, and the belief maybe starts to kick in. And young kids' enthusiasm, it can't be underestimated how much they can help teams on game day. So it felt like that took over a little bit in that second half. CB and EJ, throw over to you to talk about some players. The ones in particular I want to get your thoughts on. Jack Ross. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Just Ace raised a question that I want him to hold on to at the end of the show when we talk about the Port Adelaide game. Yeah, hold on to that question and remind us of that when we get to the game at the end of the show.
Good shout. So the players want to hear your thoughts on EJ and CB, Jack Ross, Ben Miller, Jacob Blight, and Thompson Dow.
Which one do you want, EJ? You pick.
No, just start talking. You're right.
All right. Jack Ross. So Jack Ross, two snags, 28 disposals, 14 kicks, 14 handballs, 5 marks, 4 tackles, 7 clearances for 591 metres gained. That was the game of a life from this young man. And it was actually the game we needed. So EJ and I actually debated Jack Ross and Dion Prestia a little bit today, which also included Sons into the conversation, but we'll leave him out of it. I guess Jack Ross, this is why Ross has to play now in the mid, and whether you use Prestia as a sub or however you use him, this kid has to play mid for the whole year because he can produce. He may not always produce this performance, but he's going to produce some very good performances through the year. So who is a fantastic support to Hopper and Taranto. Over to you, Ej.
Yeah, clearly his best game for the club. As was the game of Thompson Dow. 22 disposals, which was good. Four clearances, 297 metres gained. But he had a game-high 9 tackles. This is the work rate that I honestly don't think that I would see him possess. He's never going to be a star. I mean, and I think that's a fair enough assessment. But if you can bring that heat and that extraction and that consistency for four quarters every week, you'll be in the best 23. And we always talk about the good teams, the great teams, how it's the bottom six players that is the difference. Like all teams have got good players up the top and a core, and then it's the ones at the lower end. It would be fair to say that Thompson Dow's been in and out of the side and he's been at the lower end. If he can bring what he brought to that game on a week-to-week basis, that improves the quality of the bottom part of our side, tick, tick, happy days. Best game for the club.
Easily.
Yeah, I thought his tackle point. His tackle pressure was unreal.
And the 27 pressure breaks. And I think in the last quarter, he had 5 of those tackles just in that quarter alone.
Now, Ben Miller, Michaels, I'd just like to bring you in this. Ben Miller, did you have any arguments with some people online about Ben Miller, mate, during the week?
Oh, look, I did. And look, to be fair, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but I've just felt sometimes that the judgment of Ben Miller has been clouded by his last 5 games of 2024, which collectively we were all bad. And then his preseason wasn't great, but I think some people forgot that the stats that he was having throughout most of 2024, when he was top 10, 15% of the AFL for halving contests, stats don't lie. And thankfully, we saw that Ben Miller on Thursday night.
Yeah. So Ben Miller's positioning was fantastic. His body work on the Carlton forwards was bang on. And even the intelligence, like when Cripps had that shot on goal, it would have brought Carlton right back into the game. He had the intelligence to actually be on the goal line to stop it, rebound it, and take it the other way. So, and also, for those who don't know, in the AFL Team of the Week, Ben Miller got named fullback, Vlosten back pocket, Jack Ross in the guts, and Adam Uze got named Coach of the Week. So, pretty good week for those gentlemen. But, yeah, I thought Ben Miller intellectually played a very, very good game and physically played a very good game. How did you see Blighty, EJ?
Oh, until he went off, I thought he was fantastic. Again, you know, I really thought I was happy to have him in the starting side. I thought he deserved his crack, et cetera, but I did still think that we might get exposed. And I know we went down by a lot early, but I don't think that was the fault of the people behind the ball as such. And I actually thought he was going really well until he was injured. I don't know what the update is on that. But if he was to bring what he brought on Thursday night again on a week-to-week basis, and I think this, and I think it's very easy to say that because that's the thing, is we are going to have peaks and troughs. And I suppose I've got to understand and accept this, especially that was his fourth game, I think, maybe fourth game. Yep. You might not get consistency every week, but I believe he showed enough traits that makes me believe that he will be a good, consistent player long-term. There was one player that I wanted to sort of make mention of. We all saw what happened at the end of the game with the backflip or whatever. But overall, on a looking at the stats side of things, you would say that Seth Campbell had a very quiet game. If you watch the run and the chase and the effort off the ball, he was off the charts. Off the charts. And so that is it goes to the point that Tiggs made earlier on about stats sometimes not telling the full story.
He was. For those who remember watching it, in the last quarter in particular, there was a point where Mansell went down injured and Seth Campbell ran to about three different contests applying pressure, which ended up resulting in the ball spilling out. And I think it was the goal that Lawler might have kicked to hit the front.
Yeah, it was.
Unbelievable. And he had every right to be knackered by that stage. And then to get that last goal, Tiggs, where he sprinted 60 metres and stocked it off the ground, then to do a backflip to finish it off with, I agree that the stats don't read like a great game, but you watched the impact he had was phenomenal, really.
When we were winning our flags, what did people used to say about Butler, Rioli and Gastagna? Oh, they don't get possessions. They do four or five. That's the reason. That's what they do off the ball. And funny enough, before we get onto the agenda, sorry, I don't want to break away, but the one that did it for me, the tall version of that was Armstrong, which I could not believe what I was watching. We had a tall that was running to block lanes, not worrying about his own game, running to block a lane. So the actual ball had to be diverted away from him. It was brilliant. And then his tackling and his other good stuff. So yeah, now we're in a really good spot development wise if we keep this curveball going.
And Grok and Tiggs, to talk about a couple of other players. Grok, I'll throw to you first. K-Mac tagging Cripps. Seemed a bit of a masterstroke, didn't it?
Yeah, I feel bad taking this one from EJ, but yeah, I thought Macca had an absolute ripper game. Throw the toys out, EJ. I thought, Macca had an amazing game. Obviously, Cripps is the one that's done the damage against us round one, year after year after year. And you can't Gary Ablett Jr. has said you can't tag players out of the game who win their own ball. All you can do is manage to stop their influence when they do win the ball. And that's exactly what Macca did. Cripps did end up with the 32 possessions. He was always going to find the ball. Obviously, he's Colton's number one ball winner. But he only had 216 metres gained and only the three inside 50s. And if you've watched Cripps, if any Richmond supporter has watched Cripps against us year after year, his inside 50s are where he kills us or when he drifts forward. Most of his disposals were short back handballs out of the contest or long high bombs to a contest that we absolutely mopped up. Macca was absolutely fantastic, and he only had the 16 disposals himself, but I think he had eight marks and five or six tackles along with stopping Cripps as well. So he actually found a little bit of ball himself, put the defensive pressure on, but shut down arguably them the most important player. So there's no way that we win that game if Macca didn't play on Cripps.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was hoping he would do. Like, I know a lot of people want younger kids to play, but Don't waste a young kid's talent tagging. Let someone like K-Mac do that and let the other kids do their offensive stuff and let them shine, Tiggs.
Do you remember after the Collingwood Preki game, the review we had, and we're talking about Camden as a midfielder, and I basically made the suggestion, you know what, he should be a tagger because he's got all the tools for it, the engine, the run with, and we saw it. For me, his work rate, the amount of work rate he did builds culture, and the young kids will go along with that. Ditto, I know it's not part of the Taranto Hopper along with that. They're a good combination with that grunt, the raw grunt. Camden, so proud of him. He deserved the recognition that game gave him because he flies under the radar a lot.
And what about Nankervis, Tiggs, in his game against De Koning? I mean, that was a crucial matchup that we all identified, and we probably all felt De Koning was going to get Nank around the ground, but Nank really smashed in pretty hard on Thursday night.
Yeah, not knocking TDK, he's a freak, right? His game was also a really good quality game, even though over here the Colton supporters, some of them are knocking it for whatever reason. But the difference is this, TDK was playing a TDK game for himself. He's part of his team, but he's playing his role for himself. What you saw with our Ruckman, who's a bloody warrior, his main thought you could tell was team, 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 team. So he would do the centre bows. Then he will go, okay, what's happening? Do I have to run backwards to actually protect the ball? Or do we need to score? Or go forward and be a scoring target because the forwards are getting smashed, particularly in the first quarter. where he scored his two goals, I think he did, in the first quarter and a half. When we needed scores, he actually pushed himself in those positions. But he's just so dependable. He's got neat skills for a big man. He applies pressure in the midfield. There were so often times that he would contest and then he would develop a second effort and a third effort. And he's done it all since he's been with us. He's just – that game showed, I reckon, everyone else that just thinks he's just an average ruckman because they look at his stats only in relation to tap-outs, got to see what we see. He's a captain. I've always been an Ank fan, and you guys know this, but I have to admit, the game on Thursday solidified to me why he got chosen as captain, right, for me. I was proud of him last year, but I wanted a change, and I'm happy I was proven wrong. So I hope he just goes with it. He doesn't have to be BOG every single game, but as long as he shows that energy and the kids will follow with it. Great game.
I think it's a good call on the captaincy piece. And Grok, Tom Lynch, first game back for the club. You can't help but feel that made a big difference for us.
Absolutely. And I think that's the way that Uzo had us playing all last year and even through the preseason. We lamented the inside 50s, our entries going long and high, even when we didn't have the tools down there. But what better way to instill the game plan that you want to play by playing the game plan you want when you've got the cattle available? And putting Lynch in, the game plan didn't really change from last year with our forward 50s. It's just we've now got multiple targets down there. We don't just have a LaFau. We've got Lynch. We had Bauer. We had Armstrong. It makes a big difference when you've got an actual, 200-plus gamer who's the bigger body, the experienced. I thought, he was rusty early, couldn't get his timing right, ran under the contest a few times, but that's what you expect from someone who's played 8 games in 2.5 years. Like, he was never going to get the timing right in the first half. But the second half, I thought his timing started to come back. He was getting to a lot more of the contests, he's getting his hands to the ball, maybe not marking them, but, competing. And that's the biggest thing that we needed was we needed that big body to compete, to take the pressure off Armstrong, who I thought did really, really well in that regard as well. Lynch is going to be better for the run. And next week, that's all you want. Just get the games and get the miles into the legs.
And for what it's worth, I reckon Lynch's suspension will get overturned. But maybe I'm being biased. I just can't see how that can be stuck as medium impact. But anyway, that'll be an argument for another time, I think.
Can I ask the panel a question in the audience? So every time that the media thinks Richmond's going to be crap, they ask the question, should Richmond have the round one game versus Carlton, right? Whereas they're thinking about this the wrong way. Since 2013, Carlton have beaten us 3 times in 12 years. The question shouldn't be directed at us. The question should actually be directed at Carlton. Should they be worthy of the round one game? Because they are dead set in our pockets. So all you media sycophants, you're thinking about it wrong. Get your stats right. We own them. And even now, they're meant to be a top 4 team, and we've still got them in our pockets, boys. Wallets, car keys, Carlton. They all come out of the same pocket.
I mean, everyone expecting a blowout. I went back and I looked. I think the last 6 or 7 games that we've played against Carlton, the average margin's like 11 points. That's been when Carlton have been really good. We've been struggling, the last couple of years. It's still only 11 points. It's easy to look back now, but history says it wasn't going to be a blowout.
And it gets better. They don't play us till next year. We've got them. We've got them for the next 12 months.
There's no return league.
Suck on that. Suck on it. So, and the other one was talkback was electric for the next 24 hours after that game. And I saw one comment about Snapper in the comments. I think it might have been Lady Hawkeye. Apologies if I've got that wrong. At one stage, one of the guys on Thursday night wanted Tom De Koning traded because if he doesn't want to buy into the team ethos and wants money, he can go. That's how rabid the Carlton supporters were, apart from Zach Voss. It was electric. It was the best 24 hours I've had for a long time. Thank you, Carlton. Yeah,
I think there's a lot of people taking enjoyment from that. Now, we did have some debutants play. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I was just saying Sam Walsh has copped a bit too. He's gone from being, you know, when he's injured, a gun and we need him and he makes such a big difference to when he plays. He's so ineffective and doesn't do anything. We need to get rid of him. So it's laughable.
Now, we did have some debutants take the field on Thursday night, Tiggs. The one I want you and CB to discuss is the man of the hour, Sam Lawler, who did also take out the Rising Star Award for week one, which we haven't had since, I think, 2019, which has been a long time coming. But, geez, he was super impressive and composed for a first gamer.
Yeah, he did things that you rarely see in a first gamer. And I'm talking about even the recent crops, which are like super duper developed, like Harley Reid and the like, Jason Horn Francis. You can tell they're ready-made footballers as soon as they come out of this conveyor belt compared to 10 years prior to that. He has something that he creates his own. It's like he sees the game a little bit quicker than everyone else, and his ability to make a decision while analysing what's going on 360 around him and then going, you know what, there was one passage of play that made me turn to the wife and said, this guy is going to probably captain the club, I reckon, in 4 years if he continues this sort of stuff. He got the handball from Lynch. He was going to shape up for a shot, and then he realised, no, I got a player in a better position, and he handballed it, and he did it within a microsecond. You could see him shaping and then actually release a handball, and he created. That's what he did. He obviously is still a young kid. He's raw. He's got this big frame, but he's still very raw. And in any contest he injected himself in, he just wanted to create space for his teammates. That shows me a really humble kid with his head, with full bullet buy into the group he's playing with and also the coach. I'm just thinking we've got a look, I don't want to say generational talent yet, but we identified him, people wanting to drop out of, you know, the bottom 10 in top picks during his draft year, even as low as 18, 19 and 20 because of his issues as he was developing through. We said, no, he was our kid and we backed it for 12 months and we're going to just pay dividends for it. He took my breath away, which is the only other player to take my breath away that I saw in debut. And keep in mind, we're absolutely shit house during these years with Delidio when he could hit a target from 60 metres out on a 45-degree angle. That took my breath away. And this is the first time, even with Dusty in his first year, in his first couple of games, didn't do it. I knew it was a huge talent, but now he's my Colton mate, who I've been giving it to relentlessly, actually said something. He goes, his hands were like diesel and his vision, which is high praise for a kid in his first game, in his first year. Yeah, no, I'm very happy with him.
Before I throw to you, CB, Warren, I think you've taken out comment of the night here. His nickname needs to be Nutsy. Yeah. Well done. Right. Well done, Warren. Great comment. We like that. CB, your thoughts on Lawler?
I agree with everything Tig said. I think he's first of all, I'm gonna be the bad cop. Can we not do Dusty comparisons? Let's let the kid grow and develop, and we'll love him in our own special way. He's not Dusty, he's Sam Lawler. Let him develop in his own special way. So there's a part of me wants him to keep the 22, to be honest, because I saw Sentimental there talk about Barry Rowlings. And I'm like, it's not a bad call. I wouldn't mind him saying keeping the 22 on the back. But I think what this kid has got is IP and a high IQ for football. He's never going to look like the quickest bloke out there, but I think he's always going to be in the right spots to impact a contest in some capacity. And that excites me. But look, it's only one game in hopefully a 300-game career, but a pretty bloody good start. I don't think you get much better than that in front of 80,000 people. So here's to many more of those games. But I think we've picked a beauty there.
Last point, we're seeing the worst of him. This is the absolute worst of him this season because this is his first preseason.
He's been playing cricket. Yeah.
You're right.
It's scary, isn't it? It's genuinely scary. EJ. Luke Traynor also made his debut and looked right at home out there on the MCG in front of 80,000 people. What did you make of his game?
Was that his first game, was it?
Apparently, it looked like it was the 150th, but yeah.
I thought he'd been around for a while. Really calm, really poised, but also how hard does he work and how much does he want it? Now, I don't know. I had a simple upbringing, so my pronunciation isn't the best. There's a guy on Twitter, Ricky Mangitis. He's the shin boner and he does a lot of edits and cuts, right? He did up this thing on March the 14th, like the day after, about how we just worked harder than what Carlton did. And there were two particular cuts in this edit of Trainer. And on both occasions, he'd made an effort and it was a second effort. One of the ones was in the goal square and he's been involved in tackle or whatever. And then Cripps has got the ball and he's reached out and smothered and stopped the goal scoring opportunity. And the other one was on the wing where the ball was in dispute on the ground. He's down. He's reached out and bang, knocked it out into open space into our guys. That absolute manic desire, they've been speaking about that in pre-season, about how this kid just wants it and about how he makes good decisions. And we're all talking about the IQ, stuff like that. I know that there are players that I won't mention their name tonight that I've been hard on because I don't see that manic desire. That's what I love most of all, apart from the fact that he did it all right and was smart, was that there was that absolute ferocity about the contest. Bring that on.
His footy IQ.
Tomsy. I'm sorry.
His footy IQ is through the roof, and I'm with you, Sam. He could end up being the absolute steal of the draft. He looked so good out there. And I love that he was prepared to run off his man to impact the next contest and back himself, because if you get that wrong, you get scored against. But he backed himself in and executed it. Grok, Harry Armstrong was the final debutant, who maybe didn't have a sexy stat line, but geez, we're up and about with how he played.
Yeah. Yep. Before I jump on Harry, I just want to make a comment on Trainer. He slotted in and replaced Grimes absolutely beautifully, like took that Grimes role as that third tall, the coverage type player. And yeah, you would have thought he was a 200 gamer the way he played. And even directing other players, you could see him and hear him directing and pointing and telling people if they were too far away or, giving too much leg rope. So that's an amazing trait to have already, to feel comfortable enough to be a leader, to pull up, more senior players on maybe not being as defensively accountable as they should be. But Harry Armstrong, like, insane. The stats won't pick it up, but it's so nice to finally have another tall forward with mongrel. Like, he loves the physical stuff. Like, he, after Samson Ryan, Tyrone Vickery, all of the, CCJ, all of these softish, type forwards who don't want the physical contact, don't like it. It's just nice to have someone who actually crashes packs and bullies, the shorter players. That contest on the half forward line with Haynes and I'm not sure who the other one was, but like just bullied them out of the way, knocked them over, picked up the ball pretty quickly and bang, and lovely kick to Bauer in the goal square. Like that just highlights, that we're on the right track. We're getting players who want to win the ball, but also want to pressure, want to lock it in. They're buying into the game plan of what we're trying to achieve. And it's they're not leaving it up to the smalls either. It's, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to do this and I'm going to impact. And that's all that we, that's all we can ask for at this stage. He may not be taking the marks. He may not be, winning his contest. But when the ball's in dispute, at least halving the contest, like that's all you can ask for. And I thought he did that absolutely brilliantly.
The best thing about that contest, Grok, was when he picked up the ball, most young players would have blazed away.
Yeah.
He had the presence of mind and the IQ to make the pass instead of taking the shot. That, for me, I was like, whoa.
Yeah,
I'm with you. That was a high footy IQ play as well. That That was impressive. It seems minor, but that was impressive. I 100% agree.
Hey, Michaels, just before you go to the next bit where you talk about the stats, the one thing we haven't spoke about is actually Uze's coaching, because there's a bloke that had a fair blowtorch under the belly for the whole preseason and copped a lot of shit. And Uze actually outcoached Voss. But more importantly, all the moves that he did that everyone was knocking him for, K-Mac on the ball, Dow to a win, all those moves, they all long-term paid off. So I think the one bit of love we haven't given so far is to actually Adam Uze, who coached fantastically. So well done, Uze.
Good shout. And for those who watch Dylan Friends, or if you don't know what Dylan Friends is, it's Dylan Buckley's podcast. He put a YouTube video up today. It was an interview with Adam Uze, which they did before the season. Highly worth watching. Make sure you go check that out too.
Just before we move on, for talking about coaches and giving credit, anyone who knows Kiwi Tiger put out a tweet after the game and said that Uze essentially put that onto all the work that Truck Rutten's been doing on mental mastery and strength and things like that, never giving up. So again, if like shout out to Truck for that. I thought he was really good the way that we didn't give up.
Yep. Some key stats I just want to whip through quickly from that game. We laid 76 tackles as a team. Now, I can't remember the last time we would have got anywhere near that number. There might have been some fleeting moments last year, but that one thing that also stuck out for me watching was that the amount of tackles that Carlton weren't breaking through. Quite often last year, we would see opposition players burst through our tackles, and that's when they'd get some easy scores. We were making them stick, which was good. And the other stat I saw that was interesting is in 2024, we only scored 89 points or more once in that season. That was in round two against Port. Everything else was well below that. So the fact we've kind of flipped that around in pre-season, where we weren't scoring highly there either, to hit 89 points in our first real hit out was a really, really good sign. And hopefully more of that to come. Injury reports. Oh, shit, I said the word. I report CB.
Bro!
The Tiger Tracker.
Slide that bloody thing down your... I'll be very, very quick. So, Smiley... Can I just say, for those who haven't seen Josh Smiley in the flesh, I can confirm I was about 10 metres away from his kid. He's a monster. He's a big lad. He's a dead set 6'5", 6'6" monster. And he's not narrow in the shoulders. He's a big unit. So he's
likewise tell me that CB started shaking just out of pure fear.
It wasn't shaking, it was fapping. Now, look, Smiley's still 2 to 3 weeks away. The injury report I saw was 1 to 2 weeks away. So I'm not sure. I think it's 1 to 2 weeks there, not 2 to 3 okay. there. Yep. Big fella. Hugo and Prestia, so they're 2 to 5 weeks away, so with an Achilles and hamstring. So don't expect them anytime soon. Interesting on Jacob Blight. Uze said in his presser that Blight wanted to come back on, but the coaching staff had the awareness to say Carlton went with a smaller forward line, so therefore took him off as a precaution. So I'm not going to moz him. But that was just the report from Uze that, yeah, he could have come back on if required, but they opted on the side of conservatism. Take that for what it is. And Jonty Fall had a very, very good limited time in the VFL game, and they're still monitoring him, so he's still at test for next week. But the signs are very promising there, and all the ACLs are all to be confirmed. So that's where it sits for the injuries. Oh, sorry, the eyes.
Sure. Guys, thank you for having me. I've got to bail. I've just got to bail a little bit early, but I appreciate you having me on the show. And take care, everyone.
No, love you, man. I hope it's feeling better soon.
It is. See you, man.
Yeah, so good to see Jonty Fall.
He did just report, Tiggs.
I report, yeah.
2 weeks.
No, he shot me a text in his head. Headache was starting to kick in, so hopefully he's feeling better because, I don't want to keep him up at night. Health always comes first. VFL practice match. We obviously had a practice match against Carlton on Friday. Fawcett kicked 3, Ryan kicked 3, Jonty Fall 2, Elgar 2, Sims 1, McAuliffe 1. Elgar could have actually probably had about 5 grok. He missed a couple of easy shots, unfortunately. But really good to see some players in there who were kind of bashing the door down. Fawcett in particular was relatively impressive. how important is it to have players like this actually forcing a competition for spots?
It's really important, especially up forward, where obviously we know what's happened when we haven't had Lynch up forward, and we know that he's been struggling to get his body right over the last, you know, 2 and a bit years. So having young forwards who are looking really, really good at VFL level and competing and winning contests is very important, because we don't want to be stuck in the same situation like we were this year and last year, where we had to play, you know, players who hadn't really had exposed form at VFL or AFL level. So, yeah, I thought they did really well. I'm so glad to see my man make his debut finally in Jonty. I thought he competed extremely well. And the way that he reads the ball is amazing. And, like, just his pressuring. There was a contest on the half-forward line where he absolutely nailed a tackle, drilled him into the ground. It's like, that's what we want to see. Like, a forward who tackles to hurt and everything. Yeah, Jasper, brilliant again. Bit inaccurate, but, yeah, like, just the way, like, his speed, he's quick. He hit contest really, really quickly. Beautiful kick of the footy too. So, yeah, there was a lot to take out of that game. Fawcett was really good. I mean, some of the goals that he kicked were insane.
45-metre check side.
Yeah. 45-metre check side. There was, and he also had a dribble, a nice little dribbler from the boundary line. For a bloke his size, some of the goals that he kicks should not happen. Like, it's just insane. So, yeah, like, he's coming off the back, and considering, you know, he's really only played 5 games of football now, like, really promising signs as well.
No, they were. CB, was MJ bashing down the door at all?
Very good segue. Very good segue, because I was just literally thinking about that. So, what was the name of the gentleman that I had a bet with?
Was it Campbell? Let me bring up my message. Carry on, mate.
So, for those who don't know, I had a bet going from the preseason onwards whether Maurice Rowley Jr. would line up in the round one team.
It was Campbell.
Yep. And unfortunately, one of us lost the bet. That would be me. And originally, it actually was a block of chocolate, but...
Oh, I thought you had to shave your head. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So what I am going to do is, instead of a block of chocolate, I'm going to mail him out a Bigfooty Tiger Car stubby holder when they come in as a sign of good faith. And every time he drinks out of that sweet, sweet stubby holder, he can just think about how he rolled me in a bed with every delicious mouthful of whatever beverage he has in it. So, well played. I will man up. Yeah. But, yeah, well done.
Well played, Campbell. You got him. Well played. Oh, gosh. All right. Okay, let's get stuck into the preview of the Port Adelaide game. We were going to do a try and pick our best 23, but we're probably a bit pressed for time to do that. But I dare say we can talk about some generic changes, though, instead of doing the full kit and caboodle.
I'll be easy to do it. My lineup is unchanged.
So the main talking point, there's probably two main talking points here. There's the Tom Lynch aspect. So if Tom Lynch doesn't play, if the suspension's upheld, who do you guys think comes in?
Fawcett. I mean, debut him in SA. Debut him in SA, yeah. In front of his home crowd, all of his friends and family. Like, what another good story.
Yep. The tap. Let's go.
The tap. CB, you're on the tap?
Nah, I'm on Lynch.
Let's
wash the ears out. If Lynch is suspended and doesn't play, who comes in? Do I need to speak like a Carlton supporter for you to understand this?
Kids, this is what happens when you listen to the devil's music in the 80s and don't pay attention to your education. I'm it. I would say it's going to be Samson Ryan comes in.
I thought that too, but I don't know if he's a good enough genuine forward is the only thing. I think Fawcett may have him covered there.
But I think you'll find Nankervis will switch forward and they can use Ryan in the ruck.
So they've got Jordan Sweet in the ruck. Who does the backup rucking for them? I didn't catch their game, but that's probably the other big question. If it's another genuine, like if Soldo played, for example, yeah, we'd probably have to do a Samson Ryan, but he didn't play last week, so I don't think he's going to play this week. But Yeah, I'd probably lean towards Forster, but I truthfully think that the Lynch one will get overturned. I'll be gobsmacked if it doesn't, but yeah, it could be proven wrong, I suppose. And then the other one is if Blight doesn't get up. So I know we said he's a test for the adductor strain. I'm actually leaning towards the Campbell Gray to come in and play. I know Kaczynski's probably another one that's been doing some okay work down back, but Campbell Gray's intercept marking work kind of is very similar to what Blight's been doing already, although he's probably a lot less experienced in the position.
I'll go Cozzy.
I would choose Gray, but I think they will go Cozzy.
I agree. I'd like to see Gray debut, but yeah, I reckon they go Cozzy. I just looked at the hitouts for Port to look at who their second ruck is. The only other Port Adelaide player to get a hitout besides Sweet was Ollie Wines, who had one. So K-Mac, they'll probably run.
So K-Mac is going
he's going to end him. So we've got a similar situation to last week. Okay.
Nick, I would love it if Sims was picked because I love he's got the shit in him. He's got, you want to talk about our young blokes crashing like Armstrong crashing through. He's a physical player. I just think that even though that's the style he wants to play, he's just not big enough at the moment. But I would love to see him. I want to see him get a crack early in the year.
I think he will get a crack soon. EJ and CB, I'll throw to you guys. Where's the game going to be won and lost for us? And more importantly, are Port under massive pressure now in light of their heavy loss against the Magpies? Like, does it work for us against us? What do you think?
Can I just say there was some damning footage, some absolute damning footage on before whatever the TV shows Jack Rewalt and Buckley and those guys are on. And basically Nathan Buckley said, if Port Adelaide work as hard as some of the footage that they showed in this game against Collingwood, he said Richmond will nut them and do them pretty easy. And their work rate was nothing short of pathetic. It was, they weren't running. They were actually jogging. They were literal witches hats. It was crazy when you saw the footage. But Ege, I reckon you should kick off here with the Port Adelaide coaching scenario and what your thoughts are around that and why. That might contribute.
Oh, we might have had a conversation about this today. Are they under pressure? Absolutely. What is the lunacy in announcing a handover? Every other time it's been announced, the media just jump on it and they don't leave it alone. Britton, Park and Malthouse and bloody Buckley, Mitchell and bloody Clarkson. Right, and it always goes to shit. Like, why would you say anything? Just start the season, get halfway through, and there's a few win losses, and then you say, "Oh, this is my last season. I'll probably coach three more weeks, and I'll hand it over." And Carr can have 4 weeks to end the season, or whatever. Do it something like that. Give him a farewell game at Adelaide Oval. To announce it before the season was lunacy. And results like the weekend are only just going to put the blowtorch on them, something chronic. If we do manage to win the game via the pressure that we put on against Carlton and Port crack, my goodness, I'm going to go and buy online copies of the Adelaide Advertiser because it's going to be unreal.
No, five double A, the South Australian radio station with Rowey and those guys, it'll be electric.
Speaking of, have we heard from Mark Bickley yet?
We have not.
Oh, no.
That's coming up.
It's funny. I was sitting with Michaels at the game and I turned to him at three-quarter time and I was like, I'm already starting to type that tweet in my head to Bickley, already drafting it.
Look, I think K-Mac. So, okay, let's talk K-Mac. I would put K-Mac on Horn Francis.
I
don't know. I reckon Horn Francis is a bit more damaging forward of the ball. I just reckon you can't cover them all, but Horn Francis is a very powerful unit. I just reckon K-Mac to clamp one of their main distributors. And look, we haven't talked about our main guys either. Just the thing. Jacob Hopper's third quarter was off the charts, how he helped drag us back. I mean, Taranto was good. Look, Tando's getting the right spots. He just kept knocking it forward, knocking it forward. But Hopper really showed some great value. And yeah, his third quarter really helped drag us back into that contest on his own. So he was awesome. But I think, yeah, who Kmart tagging? Okay.
Kmart.
Wow. Jeez, you might as well call him Timu.
I was thinking his stupid headband. The flying doorknob, he like I said, he'll get another task this week and that'll go a long way to sorting the game. But if Lynch doesn't play, it really dints our chances. But if Lynch and Blight play, shit, I think we're an even money chance going into this game. Or if we can stay with him in the first 40 minutes and don't get blown out, you won't always run teams down. They'll do the faux tough man shit, which they normally do. They'll puff the chest out, try and bang us around a bit. If we stay within that first 40 minutes, watch out.
The other thing we need is someone to make Alir accountable. Don't allow him to sit in the hole and take those intercept after intercepts, which I think give Armstrong the job. Like,
I reckon Bauer. I thought Bauer did well on wavering to drag him. Someone has to do it, though.
Yeah.
I actually think defensively we match up really well with Port. Like, I don't see any of it. There was a fear, even though it was completely unfounded and he spent half the game crying to the umpires, there was a fear that Harry could get off the chain. I don't see anyone at Port, famous last words, but I don't see anyone with that same capability of grabbing it by the scruff of the neck. Georgiades, I really like as a player, but I think, you know, he doesn't scare you physically like some of the other players do. I think defensively we match up all right.
Yeah. The one that I'm a bit worried about is Lukosius, who's had really good games against us the last couple of times we've played against the Suns.
Just put Trainer on him.
Oh, wow. Not the worst idea. Why not?
Well, Lukosius isn't a physical threat. And I think Trainer has the athleticism and the smarts to do the job.
Absolutely.
That's the one thing Lukosius isn't. He's not physical in any sense.
If, say the impossible, not the impossible, but say the unexpected happened. Say we happen to get over the line. How many weeks are you giving Hinkley?
Monday.
Weeks.
Like, you couldn't. Because it would just mean in its entirety they are not listening to whatever he's saying. They've already got one eye cast forward to Carl, whoever it is that's taking over. It would be astonishing, if he lasted any longer than the following week, I reckon. But it's a long way to go before that happens. But stranger things are happening. And we actually, funnily enough, like history will show that we actually play pretty well against Port in Port when we've got our backs up against the wall. For whatever reason, we seem to get up and about for those games. When we took a VFL side over there a couple of years ago and done them. So it's almost similar territory there. But you just can't help but wonder, EJ, how much confidence do our young kids get out of the game last week in believing in the process and what they're doing? Even though Carlton probably did us in a couple of stats early on, but they, you know, caught it back and got the win. How much of a positive energy vibe can that, you know, what can that do for the team on game day?
Games like that accelerate your development like you wouldn't believe. Like, we're going to have losses, and there are going to be quite a lot of losses this year. But the games like that, that's worth 20 games experience, right? That is fast-tracking our program out on the ground. It's brilliant. So, yes, they'll take a lot from it. And yeah, how good was it?
Yeah,
how good was it?
Yeah.
Sorry. Go on.
Go ahead.
How good was it to close the game out with the kids?
Mm. Yeah. No, I put a tweet out saying that game that's club and culture building, that win. Like, that's going to be something that they look back on and say that's where it started. Like, that is the foundation that we put in place. That's the identity that we want. So that's massive for the whole club, not just for the younger players, but even the older players like Vlosten, just seeing the younger kids come through. How refreshing is that, you know, thinking, you know, going into a game saying, oh, we're just going to give it an effort, but we may not get close because we've lost so many games of experience to, oh, my God, we've just rolled a top four contender. and did it relatively easily in the second half. Like, that's insane, even for the older blokes. Like, that's a really, really important win.
So the only thing that's a concern is the if Port come out really fired up and jump us at the start. That's probably the main concern, yeah. CB.
But the thing is as well, momentum's a dangerous thing in football. And we've got we just might have a little bit of it at the moment. And if we can just get going again, it can be very hard to stop, as Carlton found out. Even an average team, when they get a bit of momentum, is a dangerous thing. So Port will be – what will be interesting, if we get the jump on Port and we can take a good punch from them, will they go into preservation mode, some of these senior guys? Will they – you know, I mean, you've seen teams do that where players also they play for themselves. They don't play for the team. Port's got a bit of that about them.
That's what I'm banking on. If we can somehow get the first three or four goals early, it's going to cause all kinds of chaos, I reckon.
Yep.
The other thing that's in favour is Port aren't a very quick side out of the middle, outside of Rosie. They're not extremely quick and they don't like burst from a stoppage. It's really like getting the handballs out and then the long kick in. So that'll help us as well if we can match them in the contest.
All right, with that said, let's get a quick tip and margin for this one, and we'll finish off with a come on, man.
Who tipped the winner last week in the panel?
Oh, shit. Yeah, I thought we got past that, EJ. God damn it. Well done, CB. CB was the only one on the panel who tipped Richmond last week. We all went.
He only did it to be a contrarian.
Who are we tipping this week, gents?
I believe in what I said, man.
You can go first then, CB. Who are you going with this week? The Oracle.
Tigers by 8 points.
All right. I won't laugh at you this week. EJ?
Port by 13.
Grok?
Tigers by 17. Yeah.
Grok's feeling it.
I'll go Tigers by 15. I can feel Port self-imploding here.
Well, the reason for me is I'm going the reverse Moz. I tipped against the Tigers and I won. I'm going to keep tipping against them.
Declan, to answer this question, we are doing our votes, but it's going to be done off air after this. I'm going to post the video tomorrow, so keep an eye on YouTube for that video for our Big Footy Tiger Cast Player of the Year award. But
Jake
now,
Art, one
it
vote.
It is time for.
Come on, man.
Come on, man. Oh, look, there's a couple of honourable mentions before we go to this week's winner. And Grok referenced it before. Mark Bigley. Imagine saying that. Your big call for the year is that Richmond's going to go through without a win. They're going to go winless for the season. When was the last time a club didn't win a game? You've just been a dick that you're not over 2017. Come on, man. Right, seriously. And thanks to RFC Centre for sending through the vision of Kane Corns. His big call on Fireball was that we are largely irrelevant this season. Who's relevant now? And I'm not even going to mention the word that starts with A and ends with A and is four letters long. I don't need to. We're relevant. Come on, man. But seriously.
Come on, man.
Seriously.
There's one more.
Well, okay. If it doesn't relate to Carlton, go ahead.
No, it's Carlton. Go.
Right. Seriously. How arrogant do you have to be to set up your membership drive on SEN for the day after, right, your first game of the season? In your head, you've got it down as a win before the season started because it's just Richmond. So then Richmond come out and beat you and you spineless, gutless bastards cancel the membership day on SEN the next day. Come on, man.
Come on, man.
Dead set. You go straight to the top of the leaderboard. The absolute arrogance.
That's going to take some beating. The fact that these arrogant douchebags actually planned their whole thing, laugh at Richmond, ha, ha, chest puffed out.
Exactly.
And they shit their pants, and then they cancel a membership day. Amazing.
As Matt Damon said, how do you like them apples?
The only thing that can rival that was Tex Walker booking his seat for the Premiership Cup on the way back in 2017. That is it.
Yes.
That's what I was about to say.
Can I talk about some respect, though? Daniel Gorringe, or a.k.a. Richmond Gorringe. Mad respect to the bloke who actually said if Richmond win, he's going to change his name. Mad respect to the bloke. His meltdowns are pretty funny.
I sent him a message to try and get him on, but no luck, unfortunately.
He even changed his whole rebranding. It was Dan Does Footy. It's now RDF.
He fully changed it. Very, very funny. Well, that is come on, man, for the week. I'll go.
I've got one that could have almost made it, but probably one for next week. Did anyone see the article about Damien Hardwick today or late, tonight? No. Complaining about clubs approaching Matt Rowell after his off-season last year and his player recruit. He's having a whinge about clubs approaching Matt Rowell. Come on, man. Like, Michaels. Seriously? Last week?
Michaels. Grock can do the segment next week. That's going straight to number two.
Yeah, that's top five. We've got that locked and loaded for next week. Remind me during the week so I can update it. But that is gold. All right, well, that is a wrap for a Monday night show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Much appreciated. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time. As mentioned, we are about to do our Big Footy Tigercast Player of the Year votes, and we're going to upload that video to socials tomorrow. So keep an eye out for that and have a look at who we voted for. Let us know if you agree or not. Wednesday night, we've got Behind Frenemy Line, episode number 2 with Anthony from one of the Port Adelaide podcasts coming on as well to talk about the upcoming game, which will be really, really good. Was that it?
Was there a question from Abe?
I think it was in regards to Port Adelaide. It was about the Port stuff, so I think we covered it off. And at this stage, Kylie, we'll be doing a live call for the game and possibly... we'll take some live calls afterwards as well, some live reaction ones. So at this moment in time, we will do a live call for the game. Not sure how many of us will be on. I think at the moment, definitely Grock and I. Not sure what the other gents are doing. But at a minimum, we will get something underway for the Port Adelaide game for sure. So thank you, gents, for jumping on tonight. Much appreciated, as always. And until next time, go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
You are shit, Carlton. You're an embarrassment. Get out of round one. You're a joke.